So we're going to be reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. It's on page 461 of the Bibles in the pews. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, but the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them.
Evening, everyone. Starting with a personal revelation. I am a grammar nerd. I have no doubt this statement would come as a great surprise to my Year 6 teacher, Mrs. Ryan. But since then, things have changed and I have fallen in love with grammar. I have read this book called Death Sentence by Don Watson that is known to be one of the great grammatical books. Yes, I know the difference between a subjunctive mood and an imperative mood, and that's nothing to do with teenagers. Yes, the last physical book I read was called Grammar for a Full Life. And let me tell you, I feel like my life is just that little bit fuller, having read the book. And yes, I can tell you everything that is wrong with this sentence. Over there, they're playing with their cricket set. But there's a good chance that the ball is not theirs because there's a man and his mates over there and they're looking angry. Can I say I can't actually look at the screen for too long because I will get angry. There are at least 8 mistakes in that sentence. And now let me be super honest with you, and you can't tell this to anyone, but it's true. I have thrown books in the bin that I've been reading because they've had grammatical or spelling mistakes. Who's with me? About one person. Fantastic. That's great. Friends, when it comes to grammar, perfection, or at least some semblance of accuracy, matters to me. It's something that I strive towards. It's something I pursue. And let me tell you, I love finding opportunities to teach other people about grammar. I'll be on the back table at dinner if you want to come and join me. I'll probably be alone, but I'll be having a great time pondering grammatical things. Now, before you get up and walk out thinking I'm not just a grammar nerd, but I'm a grammar narc, and you're going to call a psychologist for my issues, I want you to pause and just give a moment's thought to the things that really matter to you. We all have things that matter to us. Things about which we actually really care. Things in which we are seeking better. Things in which we are seeking best. Things in which we are seeking even perfection. Perhaps it is that Strava segment. Perhaps it's an element of your work. Perhaps it's that one subject at uni that you know if you nail that, then everything else will come together. Perhaps it's your surfing, perhaps it's your running, perhaps it's your house or your other house or the fluffiness of your pillows on your bed. Perhaps it's everything. But for people in this part of Sydney, in this moment in history, the way we are taught to think is that we can be the best, do the best, experience the best, and get the best. Life has limitless potential. And it is never right to think near enough is good enough.
A friend of mine said to me during this week, one of her father's maxims was never minimalist, always maximalist. And so whenever she sort of went, that'll probably be enough, her dad would look at her and go, maximalist. And that's the air that we breathe, our schools, our universities, the books we read, the coaches we listen to, the podcasts we listen to, all encourage us in an endless striving for best, for perfection, for remaining in the belief that you've not done enough until you've actually arrived at perfection. And if this doesn't sort of resonate with you and you don't think the pursuit of perfection quite describes you, then no doubt you've felt the criticism of others for not striving at your best. It's like the person will say to you, didn't you work that hard in Year 12? Didn't you network enough at uni? Didn't you spend enough hours at work? Didn't you do that parenting course? Didn't you follow that diet? So we live in this world that's either striving towards perfection or making us feel guilty for not doing that enough. Because allegedly, life has limitless potential. And the only thing holding you back is you. Even Mary Poppins is pushing this agenda. In the second last song in the stage play, Anything Can Happen, this is what is sung, and I'm not singing it, right? I'm just going to say it. If you reach for the stars, all you get are the stars, but we found a whole new spin. If you reach for the heavens, you get the stars thrown in. Anything can happen if you let it. Life is out there waiting, so go and get it. Grab it by the collar, seize it by the scruff. Once you've started living life, you just can't get enough. Now, those last few words, I think, summarize our predicament. And it is that the air we breathe holds up this striving for success and this striving for perfection in the end as a sign of our worth. And once you head down that path, you just can't stop because your personal significance and your own personal value to friends and family and the world are all hinged on you doing enough. And so in the quiet moments, most people will say to themselves something like this, once I reach this summit, people will see I'm not flawed and I'll be worth something. Now, where is all this leading us? In theory, with all the effort that so many put into this way of thinking and this way of life, it ought to be leading us towards some sort of joyous contentment. If we're finally achieving things for ourselves and seeing our hard work pay off, surely it's going to be leading to joy and greater joy in life. But there's this guy, Professor Thomas Curran, who's a social psychologist from the London School of Economics and Political Science, and he's currently devoting his life's work to researching everything inside perfectionism in the Western world, in cultures just like ours. And he says, far from it breeding contentment and joy, it's actually breeding the exact opposite. And so in a 2019 TED talk, he said, we know from clinician case reports that perfectionism conceals a host of psychological difficulties, including things like depression, anxiety, anorexia, bulimia, even suicide ideation. Those of us with perfectionist tendencies were more motivated and engaged at work, but their behaviour and thinking had strong links to higher levels of burnout, stress, and workaholism. Some researchers even found that having strong perfectionist tendencies could reduce your lifespan. And so Dr. Curran's main concern with perfectionists is that enough is never enough. And it's killing you. And so can we get out of this wearisome pursuit of enough? Is there another way of thinking? Well, it may come as a surprise, but the Bible has something to say about all of this. As a book, often the Bible is completely underrated, but it contains so much wisdom that our culture would really benefit from. Wisdom I know I need every day, ancient wisdom that you might benefit from as well. And with regard to these issues, the Bible has two things to say that explain the reason for our constant striving, and while it fails us, for our constant striving and yet frustration at never arriving. Two realities that explain this, taught all the way through the Bible, but in that short section that Saskia just read for us, we see them really clearly. And the first one is this. It's that our striving is against an untamable force. From verse 5 in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. And to the place the streams come from, there they return again. See, what's being established here is that the physical world is characterized by an endlessly repetitive cycle of movement and change, and yet no goal is ever being reached, no ultimate status is ever being achieved, no perfection is even being targeted, but rather there's just a repetitive, hurrying, in ordered, structured cycles. They're powerful cycles and endless cycles, but they cannot be changed. And this therefore logically excludes the possibility of anything in the world being genuinely controlled, genuinely perfected, genuinely under my power and authority, that I can make it do what I want it to do. And so against the untamable forces of the world around us, our efforts at control are meaningless, pointless. No matter what level of effort you try to put in to control and bring order and perfection and satisfaction for yourself, your efforts will ultimately remain in vain because of the power of the world itself. It's untamable. It has a strength and an independence that cannot be tamed. And yet you might say, well, that's pretty big picture. There are certain things I can control. There is much that I have power to perfect, and I can feel valuable and seek worth and be successful in certain small things, and I can find meaning in those efforts. But herein lies the helpfulness of a second piece of wisdom from this part of the Bible. And it's this, that our striving is with a finite, limited body. Are there maybe some things about which you can control? You yourself, though, however, will be the ultimate limiting factor in the pursuit of enough. So from, again, earlier in this little passage, what do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. Oh, we labor and toil, we strive and push, we sacrifice and reach for better, for best, for perfection. We do it for those we love, and we do it to feel good, and we do it to know worthiness. We do it for the praise of others, and then we die. And that's the end. And what have you really gained if that's it? You bust your guts for 90 years and then just, that's it? Sure, you may have had some good moments. It may have been a blessing to some. But geez, a lot of effort put in for it all just to disappear in a flash. And so he summarizes further down. He says, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. And I wonder if that resonates with you. It certainly resonates with me. There are so many things I'm meant to be doing that sometimes just looking at my calendar is overwhelming. And that's before I think about myself as a son, as a husband, as a father, as a friend. I can't do it all. And even during COVID lockdowns, when I wasn't allowed to do anything, I still felt weary, sometimes even overwhelmed. I wonder if that's your experience of life as well. And yet, onwards we go, striving hard in weary bodies, pursuing enough, even though we can never have enough. So it goes on here, the eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. He was here before our time. See, there is a hole that cannot be filled. And even when it is filled, there's always someone filling it faster, better, before and after. And the wisdom here is that there'll be no end point to a pursuit of enough. And even if there was, your own finitude, your being limited, your only having a certain lifespan holds you back from ever really fully achieving perfection. And then verse 11, no one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I mean, do you know the name of your great-great-great-grandparents? See, all this effort and striving is only causing frustration and disappointment and fatigue and stress as we all continue to strive for the very thing that in the end is unachievable. And it's why at the beginning of this passage he describes it all as meaningless, fleeting, temporary. Because the world is untamable and you're trying inside your limited, finite self to give it your best effort, trying to achieve something, but it's like trying to stop the sun from shining. And in the end, we're all just gone and forgotten. And so the habits of our lives are built around what is best. We want best. We want perfection, but the striving is never satisfied. We're just not strong enough. We just don't live long enough to ever be or get enough or do enough to be able to say enough. And so when is enough enough? Sometimes I feel like saying, can I just stop the world and get off? Is there a better way, a different way, some other way of seeing the world? Well, let me share a little secret with you. I always thought I would represent Australia at something. I never have, and I now strongly doubt that I ever will, unless it's for best receding hairline or best dad joke. But I look around and I've got some stiff competition even here. This is all part of why I love competitive sport. I'll watch just about anything. And so on the 8th of August 2021, when Nicola McDermott won the Olympic silver in the high jump with a jump of 2 metres and 2 centimetres, a new Australian record, I became an instant fan. To be an Olympian, however, you must strive at perfection. Of what you eat, what you drink, what you breathe, who you see, how you spend your time, how much sleep you get, and what you do with your time is all monitored and as controlled as can be, so that in Nicola's case, you can be a lean, mean jumping machine. And by the end of 2021, she was just that. In the 2021 season, she competed in 14 competitions, won 8 gold medals, the Olympic silver. She broke the Australian record 3 times, and she had an ongoing consecutive record of 23 podium finishes in a row. And so as the Olympic or the Commonwealth Games approached last month, I was pumped. I was absolutely sure that she was destined for Commonwealth Games perfection. And then the day before the finals, she posted this on Facebook. Unfortunately, I won't be competing in the finals tomorrow. What was thought to be a tight calf after my qualifying round turned out to be a torn muscle in my jumping leg. Of all the emotions and shock I could feel in the moment, I still have peace. It might be a torn muscle, but I have a full heart that even in times that make no sense, I'll be covered and back jumping soon. How is it that she can say she's at peace when her whole world is tumbling down right beside her? How is it that she can say that she has peace when she has crushed the dreams of 26 million Australians, or at least me? How can she say she is at peace when all her dreams are crushed? Well, she goes on to say this. I want you to see in everything that the thread that holds my life together is Jesus. And he is what makes the difference. It's what the world needs. I'm beyond content, almost amongst incredible victories and the toughest patches of my life, the thread is holding up. As I now enter into a new seasons of athletics and life, I thank Jesus for the strength and passion that he provides every day. Without it, I would be lost and worried about the future. But perfect love casts out fear, and peace is found in a person, not in a formula. Now, there are plenty of places you can go to find formulas for peace amidst the striving. Plenty of places you can go to find a formula for rest amidst the hurry, for hope amidst the culture of perfection. There are fourfold paths, there are five pillars, there are a million BuzzFeed articles that'll give you the seven ways, the 10 ways, or the 11 ways. But just following those formulas can be wearisome, more than one can say. And I reckon it's slightly ironic that often all those articles you can look up in psychology magazines and other places that'll tell you how to get over hurry and perfection and worry and all those things sort of say, follow this formula. It's sort of ironic that they're saying, don't follow this formula, follow this one, be stressed about this instead. And of course, you end up in the same place. But by contrast, there's a person you can go to. And he doesn't tell you, go and do. This person invites you to come and rest. And his name is Jesus. And to our striving hearts that can never get enough, he says this. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. Now, this great invitation flows from Jesus' grief over watching people trying to ascend a mighty religious summit carrying unbearable expectations on themselves. He's watching them striving for their goals, trying to achieve, trying to prove themselves worthy, and he's watching them grow weary and burdened, and his compassion overwhelms him, and so out flows these words. But these words are not just about that moment. What we see is that Jesus has always known the burdens we humans place upon ourselves. He's seen our wrestle for meaning. He sees and knows our seeking for more. He's seen how weary we've become. And his compassionate heart has turned toward you. So he did not demand that we reach out. He did not demand that we reach up. Rather than call us up his mountain and call us to approach his summit, Jesus came down to our level, into our world, from heaven to earth. He came down to show us himself and to give himself to us. He came to walk with us and to show us another way, a better way, his way. And when he came down, he proved that he was not just another person in a long line of religious prophets. For when Jesus came down and was faced with the untamable faces of the forces of the world that hold us back, Jesus tamed them. He calmed storms, he healed sickness, he raised the dead, but most importantly, he deeply understood and had compassion for people, the good and the bad. The humble and the arrogant, the insider, the outsider, the despairing and the broken. Jesus showed time and again that his heart was for real people like me, real people like you. And when Jesus came down, he showed that neither his heart nor his body were limited by time and space. So when he says, come to me, he had time for people then, but he still has time for people now. When Jesus says he can offer rest for weary souls, he had time for people then, and he still has time for you and for me now. He does not live in a body like ours that wearies, but he knows our weariness intimately. He understands our burdens and our griefs and our failings. And yet he still wants to walk with you. And so Jesus offers himself to you. He says, come to me. I'll give you rest. Learn from me, for I'm humble and gentle in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. So what Jesus offers is himself to walk with you and to orient you to a different way to think about life and a different way to do life. And it's a way in which the weariness ends and your worth will abound. It's a way in which the striving ends and your security for your future abounds. It's a way in which perfectionism ends, but a purpose for your life abounds. It's the way of Jesus, where anxiety and fear and fretfulness are laid down, and hope and rest and peace are yours in abundance. He tamed the untamable, and his heart is for you. And he says, come. Come because I'm enough, he says. Now, I'm going to take this further next week and look at something deeper that lays behind our failure to thrive despite our striving and what Jesus has done about that. I'd love you to come back and I'd love you to think some more about this deeper reality that lays behind our failure to thrive. But for now, in the face of devastating loss, when Nicola McDermott said peace is found in a person, this is what she was pointing to. That Jesus invites you to come to him. That Jesus invites you to believe in him, in who he claims to be. That Jesus invites you to lay aside your striving and to rest in all he has for you both now and through to eternity. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Oh, moments of joy, to be sure, but many frustrations and in the end, death. What do people gain when they come to Jesus? Enough. When you come to Jesus, you find he is enough.
We're here with our panel, and we're going to have a chance now just to reflect on what we've heard, to think about, how it rings true for us. And so everyone's already met Nigel, but we have two other friends. So could you guys please introduce yourselves and maybe let us into what you do during the week?
Hello, my name's Helen, and I am a primary school teacher, and I teach a beautiful bunch of year twos during the week.
Hello, I'm Kang. I work during the week as a software engineer, which means I sit at a computer and type letters all day.
Excellent. Well, to kick off our discussion, I wanted to ask particularly Helen and Kang, something that Nigel said is that we kind of strive for perfection, but we can't actually control the world. And so I'm curious to know, does that ring true in your experience?
I think I fall more on the side of the fence of the type of person that Nigel described who maybe gets criticised for not striving for perfection. There's lots of areas in my life where I do strive for perfection, and that's probably more in relationships and wanting to control, I guess, the way that people perceive me and the way that I perceive friendships and family relationships are going. But I don't strive as much for perfection maybe in the realm of education and work. Well, I'm a teacher, but I do, I'm thinking back on my own education and... Oh, gosh. My principal doesn't see this. I tried my hardest and I didn't really push myself to grab that perfection. I was content. In other areas of my life, there's certainly a lot of trying to grab control of things that are way out of my control. Particularly, I think Kang will touch on it a bit, like just health and broken bodies and failing bodies. I'm only 25, but it's just, yeah, our bodies aren't going to last forever. And I think that's one thing that we can try and control, but ultimately, yeah, I can't.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, I'm someone who really likes to be in control and likes to, I think I'm very prone to striving for more, striving for success and money and all of those things. I think, yeah, definitely to some extent, it's clearly not possible. I think there's just things that are way out of our control. I think health, I was talking to Helen before, is one of those things that, you know, there's just things that you can't control, you can't even understand about why things are going wrong, or I think COVID was another example of just something that's way beyond any of our controls that just changes our life completely and that you can't even really plan for. So, yeah.
And Nigel, you said it in your talk, so you've obviously come to the conclusion that you can't control life. What's been your experience that's driven you to that conclusion?
Yeah, so lots of things. I thought I would be a way better husband and father than I am. And it's disappointing to hurt people who you love. And I thought when our first child was born, she doesn't go to church with us. I just thought I'm going to be the best dad in the world. And I think it was probably within about 15 minutes I'd failed. I don't remonstrate. Like I don't sort of sit in the, you know, in the corner and feel guilty about all of that. But I just reckon in so many ways. But that's just I just thought I would be so much greater than I have ever experienced being.
And then as you walk into that experience and it doesn't pan out, that's when it's hit you that you can't actually control life as you want.
Absolutely.
I think that's the worst thing is that it's not just things that, I personally can't control that go wrong. It's like I'm flawed and sinful and I do bad things that, you know, are totally in my control and that screws things up as well.
So Helen and Kang, as you guys were listening to Nigel talk, were there any things in particular that stood out to you or that you wanted to ask Nigel about?
Yes. I brought my notebook. Because I think I am, as I described, on the other side of perfection, not striving for it constantly in every aspect, but is there a time and place for not striving for perfection, but some kind of level of let's do better? Is there a time and place for working really hard at things?
Yeah, excellent question. I don't think that... I believe that God has created the world and placed us in the world and that we are to live in the world in the way that God has designed us to live and therefore, as the one who's created the world, that we actually live in the world in an ordered fashion, in a way that, the way that God wants us to actually live in the world. As I look at that picture and who God is and what God is, I don't think His plan for us is to be lazy. I think His plan is for us to actually exercise the gifts and skills that we have and to exercise the capacities that we have to actually exercise benefit for the world. Absolutely. But we don't do those things so that we might feel good. We don't do those things so that we might feel worthy. We don't do those things so that we might be able to go, you know, someone might be able to put on our tombstone, she nailed it. What I want to actually see on my tombstone is he worked hard for God, using who God has made me to honour him with who he's made me. And so that's going to mean beating to a very different drum to, you know, two houses with a boat, 2.5 kids and a pay package that has a big bonus attached. That's a really different way of thinking. And so I don't think that you look on at Christians and think they're all therefore going to be lazy. In actual fact, you look on and think they're all actually working in a completely different fashion because they're not worried about achieving now. They're actually worried about honouring God.
And I like the way you spoke about thinking about who you are and who we believe as Christians we are made by God with certain gifts and certain skills and not trying to fit a different mold and striving after things that maybe we weren't gifted or created for.
Kanya's never going to sit on a stage and smile about being a year two teacher.
I will.
Yeah. But that's it, Riley. Yeah. And you're pursuing the best that you can in that space. And Kang is not, because that's not how God has created him.
Exactly.
I reckon I'd be a pretty good year two teacher. Just kidding. no, I'm just kidding. I think for me, like, I've been at church for a while. I think one of the things that stood out for me from tonight was, you know, knowing that we have that peace and that comfort that comes from knowing Jesus, and knowing that what Jesus has done for us means that we are guaranteed an eternal hope and an eternal future that we don't have to strive for. And I think that I kind of know that. But then I look at my striving for more and striving for perfection and success, and I understand that I'm at times teetering on the edge of, like, having the wrong motivations. So I guess my question is, when or what might it look like? How might I be able to tell when I'm kind of on the wrong side of that?
Yeah, you guys ask hard questions. It's excellent. I think a few things. Number one, I think there's something internal to you being honest with yourself. As a Christian, we do want to live in the world honouring God. That's part of what it is to be a Christian, to live in the world honouring God. And if you are honest with yourself and you think, I'm going to work today so that I can have people at work go, I am the best programmer there is here. I punch letters faster and more accurately than anyone. I'm sure there's numbers too, by the way. Yeah, I punch stuff faster, and I'm getting the program dialed up and fixed, and in a way that's, if that's your motivation, that's your intrinsic, that's the thing that's driving you, and you're claiming to be someone who's a follower of Jesus, I think that that's time to question what's going on. So there's a need for honesty in ourselves, but also one of the joys of being a Christian is you actually hang out with a community of people. You have people around you who know you and love you, and we have lots of little groups and things connected with church where people are encouraged to get together week by week and to know each other well and to love each other. And part of loving each other is actually going, Kang, I just feel like in your language, this is not real, by the way, this is just an example of what might happen. I just feel like in your language, the way you're speaking about work and even asking us to pray about work recently, that you might actually be crossing over that work is the end in itself rather than work being a means to honour God. How do you think you're going with that? And actually, part of the joy of being Christian is you're in a community of people who want what is best for you and are going to actually, I hope, be challenging one another and asking one another. So I think that there's some questioning of ourselves and some questioning of each other. Then the end helps us recognise what's going on for us in that space. And the more that we can do that for one another, I think the better that will be at seeking to honour God with who he's made us. Yeah.
I have a question. So, Nigel, you just talked about, we're talking about, like, motivation for working hard and for striving. And given what you were talking about, I'm wondering how you think those two different motivations make a difference to how we feel as we're striving to good things. When does enough is enough kind of become the problem with our motivation?
Yeah, so you're saying sort of motivation to be honouring God versus motivation for something else is...
Yeah, so motivation just for ourselves versus motivation to honour God, does that actually make a difference in how we feel, and will we end up feeling better if we're doing it to honour God? That seems maybe what you're saying.
Yeah, every single time. I think you'll end up feeling better seeking to honour God, because what you recognise when, I think as a Christian, is that all the things that you can achieve in the world are but temporary. Is, I think, because one of the things we'll see next week and the week after is that Jesus invites us in, not so that life might just be to the full now, but that we might actually have life to the full beyond eternity. And one of my songwriting heroes is called Phil Collins, and he has this great one line. You will have never heard of him, but anyway, look it up. He's got a great, unless you're a bit more my age, anyway, moving on. He's got this great line, which is just, you can't take it with you when you go. So whatever credit you bank with others, what credit you bank with the bank, no matter how many plaques there are in workplaces or other things with your name on it, no matter how many little achievements and trinkets and rings and awards and, you know, MBAs or Nobel Peace Prizes or whatever else you get, when it comes to the end of life, you can't take any of that with you. It actually is of no value in eternity, but what is of value is honouring God. And so it's very different, because you're not then panicking about, did I get the biggest pay rise? Or did I get the biggest award? Or how do I get the biggest award? Because I need the biggest and the best in order to actually keep up with the Joneses. And if I really want to have a happy life and have a big house on the beach, I've really got to work hard. I've really got to put in 7 days. But actually, as a Christian, you really got to just honor God and come to Jesus. Because in Him, that you're going to get far more eternally than you can ever achieve now. And in Him, you'll find life to the full in a way that you will never find in the things that you can achieve and have. And part of the Question Life course is digging into this sort of very question. Is life to the full pursued best in the way that Jesus tells us, or in the way that the world is pushing us? Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for your questions, for your insights, and for starting the conversation, which hopefully we'll be able to continue together over dinner or in our friendships with one another. And so that brings us to the end of our night together. We would really love to begin or continue the conversation with you. So if you haven't already, please fill in those white cards around you, because that allows us to take the initiative to get in touch with you. And otherwise, we hope that, yeah, you are able to continue the conversation, to keep thinking about the things that we've begun talking about tonight. And thank you so much for coming. Thanks to those online for joining us.